You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Hey, One of Us Network listeners, this is Trevor from the Nighthawks podcast, invading your space to ask you to give us a spin if you like movies.
And I'm Matt, joining Trevor to ask you to join our cult.
May not be a cult.
Probably a cult. On the Nighthawks podcast, we cover new movies, old movies, great movies, bad movies, so bad they're good movies. And we cover movies from Norway.
One movie from Norway, one time.
So far. And it was a really good movie from Norway.
It is a good movie from Norway.
It's got Stellan Skarsgård.
Matt, this is a promo for our podcast, the Nighthawks podcast. Do you want people to listen to the podcast, or do you want them to watch In Order of Disappearance?
Wasn't that the point of covering In Order of Disappearance on the podcast, to get people to watch it?
Fair enough. Watch In Order of Disappearance, and then afterwards listen to our Nighthawks podcast episode on it, or you could listen to an episode on any of the over 120 other movies we've covered.
You can find us on Google Podcasts, Audible, Spotify, Stitcher, and at nighthawkspodcast.com.
It's weird that the must-see in a theater first post-COVID film is one that requires you to be as quiet as possible in it. This isn't my first movie to go see in the theater since COVID, but it's definitely the first one I'm like, oh, guys, you should go see this in the theater.
Yeah, it's my first non-Michelle Pfeiffer movie in the theater.
Is that a prerequisite, Frank?
Well, for me it was. Yeah, she had two that I went to go see. I saw Batman Returns at Christmas, and then I saw French Exit in April, and so this is my first. This is my first with people.
Oh, wow.
Nice. With more than six people.
I had to get two Pfeiffers to get it off, you know, like Pfizer, Pfeiffer. You got in there.
I know. Did you go for the Pfeiffer or the Madonna? Which one did you go for?
he got his Pfeiffer injection. He's on his
two doses. You know, like after the first one, he's not fully safe.
Yes.
Another Pfeiffer. Ready to go.
I'm sure. Ready to go.
And he just said, fuck it, and watch Batman Returns again.
Yeah.
I got two of the Madonna, but now I'm like a virgin. In theaters. Anyways.
Well, we are talking about A Quiet Place Part Deux. Part two, part double I, whatever you want. Anyway.
It's not part due, like some sort of Scooby-Doo, like, runoff. Like, they pull the head off the alien. Oh, what? Man, Finnegan.
Boy, that would have been a twist I did not see coming.
Don Knotts!
We would pull off the head of the monster, and it's Donald Trump! I would do normally, as someone who dabbles in comedy, a Donald Trump impression right now, but
don't do it.
Yes, no. Thank you. I can't do impressions.
I think so. We're so good.
And every time I was trying to do one the other day with my wife, and she's like, is that Ernest?
Burn.
I was like, let's just not do impressions.
Are you really trying right now?
Yeah, I don't think I was.
Stupid, but you know.
Well, A Quiet Place Part 2 was originally supposed to come out, well, about a year ago, and it didn't because director John Krasinski, who was the main star along with his wife, real life wife, and wife in the movie, Emily Blunt, had insisted, this is just not a film that people watch at home for the first time. This is a comeback to theaters film, and I couldn't agree with him more. It really is that a shared experience type of film. And I'll tell you, this movie, I think, is double on the scares with the first one. It's not necessarily saying for quality or not yet, but like, I think this is much scarier than the first one. And even Martin Thomas, who was sitting next to me in the theater, I love watching him when there's a real scare, because he like normally he's just so sedate, like whatever. And he was like jumping out of his skin multiple times.
I think audibly a couple
you eat?
Times. I just get startled and I eat.
I legit jumped. And Chris, I was on Chris's other side and he saw me jump a couple times. And it's
we
jump
both scares did.
Are plentiful.
You know, it got me one good time too. It's funny, like, I watch so many horror movies and I'm still a mark for like a jump.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter how many I've seen. And this is, you know, it's a PG-13 horror. It's not like insanely like going to screw you, you know. But it got me too. The sequence isn't good. Like, I was like, it's well crafted. Well crafted scares in it too.
This is the first highly suspect review in a year. We switched to Screener Squad, which meant we're doing it online. None of us are in person. Highly suspect reviews will now come to mean when we're all in person and fucking around. And that means it's not going to be as tightly edited. Sorry. Because there's no way to edit it as well when we're all in the same room. This is
what the people want. They've been clamoring for it.
Have they? This is what my reviewers wanted.
It's the cinema verite of podcasting.
Exactly.
It's the content people crave, Chris.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Well, that was Tessa. Say hi, Tessa.
Hi, Tessa.
Okay, and that's Frank over there. Say hi, Frank.
Hi, Frank.
And that's Alan.
Hello.
I knew you were going to do that.
Sorry.
God.
So, you teed it up. For me not to. That's the comedy rule, right? It's like, I don't know what the comedy rules are.
I think I do all the time, and then someone's like, no.
Yeah. It's like you do it twice and then you flip it on the third or you do, I don't know what it is.
But I do know one rule. If someone tells a joke that everyone thinks is funny and everyone laughs, do not be the guy to go, oh yeah, and try and extend that joke because you'll just make everyone sad.
You got to feel the roller coaster. You don't want to be the guy making the joke right when it's on its way back up.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, anyway, the story here follows over a year after everything happened after the aliens have landed on Earth in the first film. Spoiler.
The monsters.
Yeah.
Not locals.
If you watched the first movie, you know that it ended with the surviving family because Krasinski didn't make it, but he sacrificed himself honorably and nobly. Oh. They discovered, thanks to daughter Reagan, played by the really impressive Millicent Simmons, that feedback is the one thing that can stop these super fast, sound sensitive creatures. Like, it puts them in stun.
Mm-hmm. It's not just any feedback. It has to be a feedback of a certain, like, brand and frequency of her, like, earpiece that she has.
Yeah. Hearing aid. Presumably, you could do it in other ways, but, like, that's how she discusses it. The movie
hasn't explored it, really.
Yeah. She has a cochlear implant, which she really actually has in real life, for the record. She is actually a deaf actress who has partial hearing back because of that. We see that's how they managed to survive. All right. So that's not really the beginning of this movie. I mean, that's where the last one ends and where this will start. What we get is a little bit of day one, which is I was so hoping for, which I'm like, you know, the movie starts, there's John Krasinski. We're like, huh? It's like day one.
I knew old Krasinski had to get back in front of the camera.
He had to do that little like supporting.
He's
like,
too much of a star. You're gonna dip back in there.
He's writing and directing again, and we all love the guy. You know, it's Jim from The Office. Jim. He's great. But we get to see what happened the day that they came, because everybody knows the first movie. If your first movie is like Alien, your second movie, at least for a little while, has to be more like Aliens. We need to see multiple of the monsters taking out hundreds of people and
action.
Gosh, that pays
spectacular.
Off.
Spectacular sequence.
It really is. I trusted it enough, but when it started off like that, I was like, hope this movie doesn't go too big the whole time. Because, you know, you get the sequelitis, you gotta go bigger, you have more money, you're a trusted commodity, you made a shit ton of money with A Quiet Place, here's your money, make A Quiet Place 2. And the opening sequence, like, makes good on that promise. Like, this is bigger, it's a sequel, you get to see, like, the invasion, essentially. I mean, it's not much of a spoiler, I think it's in the trailer. So
it answers questions, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. It does, and it also does the most important thing, because we know they're not going to introduce new characters.
Exactly.
And in the flashbacks, you're like, hey, there's Cillian Murphy doing almost nothing in this sequence. Yeah. I wonder if that will be relevant later.
Exactly.
Well, of course, if you saw the trailer, you would know yes.
But even if you
didn't. This is a surprise to me.
The fact that's a really well-known actor, you're like, he's definitely coming back. For and sure enough, he does, because the family decides, once they flash back to post the first movie, that we can't stay here. Our house is kind of destroyed. We've got to leave. And they find this bunker that he's in. And along the way, the little boy gets injured from a trap he's laid out. And they're like, okay, we can't move very fast. Cillian Murphy, Emmett, says, you can't stay here. He's freaked out. And, you know, mom, Emily Blunt, Evelyn, is like, fuck you, man. You were friends with us and with my husband. Yeah, tell me you're going to kick us out of here. So everything's kind of, he's really scared. His whole family has died because of these things or other reasons. And the person who thinks they know what comes next, in fact, is Millicent Simmons, who they've really elevated here to the star of the film, because they find a radio signal they couldn't hear back at the house that keeps playing on a loop the song Beyond the Sea, which just makes me think of BioShock, but still.
Sure. Same.
Yeah. And she decides that that's a coded message to say, hey, here's where you should go. Is it true? Is she going to survive a voyage? She says, fuck it, I'm leaving on my own. You know, she goes out there with her cochlear implant and a speaker and the family shotgun and is like, I'm going to do this. Eventually, she ends up with her and Lee in one story and the mom and the other kid in the other, as these two stories all start to converge towards the end in a really nail-biting race to accomplish a singular goal. And
great segues back and forth.
Yeah. And they're both being stalked by monsters, and it's both like edge of your seat, and you're both like, we all know how it's going to end a half hour from the ending, but it's a matter of getting to that moment. And of course, it being a very, you know, last second, imagine that music playing from Aliens when right before she presses the airlock button.
Yeah. Like, Homegirl was giving me some serious Ripley vibes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yes.
Puffy blue, like, zip up or button up jacket. It was, like, kind of denim-y. Kind of reminded me of Ripley's, like, uniform a little bit, the top half.
I can see that. Yeah,
I can see that too. There's so much excruciation. Krasinski puts you through these two sequences that are just the way he layers both storylines in such nail biting ways when so much drama is happening. It's so tense. And man, I just aged. I think a couple of years, because he does that twice, both so effectively. They really do a number on your nerves.
Dude, I was feeling frazzled as fuck afterwards. I wasn't planning on going to a bar afterwards, but I was like, guys, let's go to a bar.
You offered us to, like, meet me over here. Like, we're on our way. Yeah.
I think that the first movie did something with the family dynamic and being not the movie you expect it to be at all, considering it's a movie about noise-sensitive, giant, unstoppable monsters, that a lot of it is, quiet and, you know, touching and really great performances. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something to be said for how that was a harder movie to make than the second one was, to make that balance really work between scared and just really into watching this family and what was going on with them. This one kind of skips past most of that. I mean, we've set up the dynamic. Cillian Murphy's Emmett is the only character who really needs some degree of who is this guy, where does he come from? And we do get enough there.
We get a little bit.
Yeah, enough to know who he is and for it to believe a really good actor like Cillian Murphy to believe him in this part.
And that casting goes a long way. Because
it really does.
The movie is brisk. It's not, like, long, and it moves at a pace. So, like, they're not really spending a lot of time to develop it. So a lot of it's done just in this performance. Like, when you can see that he's lost a lot during this tragedy.
Shorthand.
You know, yeah, they're shorthand there, and they're showing you that. But if he doesn't, like, sell that in his performance, then he comes off as just like, oh, here's, like, another guy. Mm-hmm. Like, another – John Krasinski can't make it because he's dead. So here's another guy. But it comes off as a distinct character, and it's done really well.
He's not just a stand-in for John Krasinski.
Exactly, yeah. He becomes a defined... Even, like, one of the characters, like, the daughter is, like, pissed that he's, like, you're not him. You're not, like, anything like him. And they're kind of the movies, like, telling you, like, this is, like, it's a different thing. He has a whole other story going on. What he's experiencing is combining with what this family's experiencing. It's done really well.
Despite the fact that this doesn't have that same... Wow, how did they get that balance so right from the first film? And that this wants much more to be an action horror film.
Very much.
It works really well as an action horror film. Yeah. Like, it may not be as good technically, but the odds are I'll probably return and rewatch this one over the first one, because it just moves from one thing to the next with some really great effects. And after a couple movies in a row of really not great effects, of big dumb movies, it was like a relief to see these giant monsters look just fantastic on screen and be terrifying.
I missed them from the first one. I missed seeing them. I missed seeing how horrific they were and just like how energetic for like.
I forgot when the first one came out, everyone loved the creature design. I kind of forgotten how good the creature design is on the monsters. They're really good.
Yeah.
They're cool, like the way they, like, their heads essentially open up to, like, listen.
Yeah.
It's a cool design.
And the noise they make.
Yeah.
A great sound design.
They're a fun design. The way their heads pop open kind of reminds me of the Demogorgons.
Yeah.
Certainly. Demodogs from Stranger Things a little bit. Mm. But also, like, their hard shell, like, chitinous exterior and some of the things that end up being their flaws, you know, weaknesses later, kind of makes sense. Like, everything about them, they thought it through as far as, like, what is going to be their strong points and their weak points.
Yeah, and they also do something I wasn't expecting, and a vital turning point of this film is adding to the details of what we know about these creatures. Yeah. Like, because we know they have one weakness, and we know they have a lot of strengths.
Yeah.
But this movie reveals another major weakness they have in a really clever way, where as you're watching it, you're going,
wait a minute,
I wonder. Sorry, that was the cats freaking out, chasing each other. Like, oh, it's them, they're here, the monsters.
I miss these cats. Oh,
they're so cute.
I really enjoyed the way they built up all the tension here. And yes, a few of the scares are fake scares, but they're so well done fake scares. Tessie, you were saying this reminded you a lot of a video game.
Yeah, it was reminding me of Last of Us 2.
Yeah.
Where they ended up having some just various scenes, and it kind of played like your stealth kind of video game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of similar settings, even. Mm-hmm.
Don't want to give too much away, but yeah.
It introduces, albeit in a way that I'm just glad wasn't as big a part of the film as I was afraid it would be. Not all humans are good. Most humans aren't good who survived this. And you do, in fact, encounter a few of those. And can anyone tell me who the lead bad human was there?
Oh, my, is it someone notable?
Was he the guy from It's Always Sunny?
No.
Okay.
Who was it?
It was of course, Scoot McNairy. Who's a chameleon.
Oh, I love Scoot everything. McNairy.
I didn't recognize him at all.
He didn't have a single line either because he's being very quiet.
Show Tessa a picture of Scoot McNairy.
Scoot McNairy, you know, like, he's one of those, it won't help because Scoot McNairy looks like a billion different things.
I have a crush on Scoot McNairy. He's so odd looking.
The human magic eye.
He's one of those guys who's just like, whatever he's in, unless he's playing like a really clean cut, very normal person, I'm like, I have no idea who that guy is.
Yeah.
Scoot McNairy. Yeah.
Wait, he played the little girl?
That was him.
He played he was the little deaf
that
girl.
That guy is a
kid. He was the little deaf girl. And he played all the monsters.
Range. Hello.
Scoot McNairy, the new Gary Oldman.
I don't know about that.
I wouldn't mind that, personally.
But he is quite good.
But that sequence does really show what these events have done to people. That it really has messed with them, and it really has turned them. It's really interesting watching this film after 2020 has passed us by, because everyone's reactions, you know, to the pandemic has been different. And I love that this film shows that not everybody has, this hasn't opened up the warmth and the kindness. But this brought the savageness in people.
Yeah, when you see the first film, you're like, is honestly anyone else alive? I mean, that's kind of the question in the first film, and we're never given any suggestion that there is. They're like, as far as we know, no one else is alive in the first film.
Well, no, the first film, there's the fires in the distance. Like, the dad always lights the fire on top of the silo or whatever.
Yeah.
And they look in the distance and see other fires on the roof.
Well, I thought it was that they said that they never saw one. Because one, they even address it where they're like, hey, didn't you see the fire, Cillian Murphy?
That is one strange.
I saw it. Why didn't you light one? It's like, because I didn't want you coming.
Yeah.
It's one strange, like, side effect of this being delayed so long. Is I haven't revisited The Quiet Place since theaters. You know, if I would have seen this when it was originally planned, it would have been fresh in my head. But it's been like, you know, a full year later.
Yeah.
So I did forget some of, I remember the big strokes. I remember Jim from The Office is dead. I know, like, you have like the deaf daughter, the ear thing. Like, and it ends with them like kind of figuring out and shooting one of the things. Like, I remember all like the big strokes of it. But those little details, like the fire, other people being alive. I would suggest maybe giving the first one a rewatch before going to see this, because it's been long enough.
I did recently, because they put it out on 4K, and I was like, ooh.
Nice.
It was like one of the first ones they sent me. I was like, I wish I had a better sound system for it, for that movie that barely has any sound.
Yeah, but when the sound comes, it's important.
Yeah. That's funny. Like, this may be the one horror series where normally in horror movies, if the music starts, you know some shit's about to go down, and this is exactly the opposite. If the music stops, some shit's about to go down.
I'm just fascinated by the way this movie uses sound, or the lack of sound. I think when it's just practical sound, like people walking or something moving an object, that's such a strength of this movie. And that's where I really feel the tension the most. You feel like, well, they've got it quiet for a reason. And so your senses are all the more heightened.
Yeah.
And I've always loved that about
it. Was the first one nominated for an Oscar for sound design? Or was it...
I don't remember.
Was it discussed a lot? I can't remember.
It should have been.
I remember it was like discussed a lot. It was like a thing that might happen. Or I think it might have even been nominated for like sound design, sound editing.
It should have been. Yeah. It was exquisitely done, and it's exquisitely done here. But let's go into final thoughts. Alan, get us started.
For sure. This isn't a sound kind of funny, because I've been talking about how much I enjoyed it and like this movie. I think it's just like pretty good, like when all said and done. Like, I really like the first one about the same amount. I didn't think it was great. I didn't walk out and be like, holy shit, that is like a reinvention of horror. I think it's really hard to make a good PG-13 horror thriller movie. The first one does stuff that movie really has some teeth, like when they kill one of the children early on. It's like, oh man, this is like, he's going for it. It's PG-13, but the thing he does best is that those tension building scenes. When it's intense and he's cutting between different sequences that are happening, the editing and the filmmaking, those sequences are so good. I think in other parts of the first one and in this movie, it kind of starts to, it becomes very paint by numbers, horror filmmaking. And where like his intense scenes are like really well done. The best way I could describe it is I think Alien is a perfect movie and Aliens is a perfect sequel. I think A Quiet Place is a pretty good movie and this is a perfect sequel to a pretty good movie. It's like, it's,
which isn't even saying it's better. It's just saying it's the best sequel to that.
Exactly.
Film.
Like they don't go too nuts with it. It's not bad. They don't drop the ball either. Like if you loved the first one, I cannot see a world in which you hate this. You know, if you hated the first one, I can't see a world with all of a sudden you're going to love this one. It's a great sequel to a movie I think is pretty good. So this one is also pretty good. Like, you know, like the scenes that work really fucking well. And the performances are good. I do like the shift of the character. Like Emily Blunt, when they do shift to the children a little more and she becomes like less of a focal point, which is cool. Like it's a cool thing to do in a sequel. Like expand your world ever so slightly. They don't blow it up. It's like, oh, invasion, aliens all over the world. They're still like pretty confined and the sequences are done well and the performances are still really good. So yeah, I give it a good 6.5 out of 10.
Frank?
One of the things that really struck me most about the first one is that it's a decent horror film, and I'd say that decent in all caps because it does deliver. But what struck me the most about it was the familial bond. And how surprisingly emotional it was and how touching it was. And it brought me to tears. This one delivers in that way as well. The end sequence, both of the children are performing actions that they need to perform. I could not help but think of John Krasinski during those moments. And I was welling up. And this is the climax of a horror film. And I think it's a real testament to Krasinski and these films that they really do balance the suspense, the effects, and the emotion in a way that none of them are shortchanged. This does have a lot more jump scares than the first one, but it doesn't come at the expense of any character moments. This was worth the wait. It is really solid. It is really well done. I love Cillian Murphy. I did not know he joined the cast.
Is it Cillian or Cillian? I've been saying Cillian.
No one knows.
No one knows. Okay.
He changes it.
I've heard Cillian. I've heard Cillian. Yeah, he's fucking with us. He really is.
I like a Cillian too. Cillian sounds, it doesn't ring to me. I don't know.
I'm not from, I don't know. But I thought it was going to be like charming Cillian Murphy cameo like he did in Tron Legacy.
I think that's the first Tron Legacy name drop I've heard in like
He's in the beginning.
People forgot it existed.
Yeah.
You just can't, can you? You just can't let us have it.
I cannot. That's true.
But yeah, and I loved that he was his own character and so much about him was inferred and it was a well-rounded character at the end of the day. This is a sequel that you want to that first film because it doesn't shortchange anything that came before and it actually builds on the world that was established. And I mean, that's what you want in a horror sequel. Everyone is great here. The kids are great. Noah Jupe is fantastic. He was the only good thing in the undoing and he continues to just prove himself as a young actor and as does Millicent Simmons. Everyone needs to go watch Wonderstruck. She played a young deaf girl going to New York to search for her silent movie star mother. It's on Prime. People watch it. Yeah, I got to give this 9 out of 10 extras from that Wes Craven remake of Hills Have Eyes because I'm right now, dude. God, I was like, this is that territory now.
Academy Award nominated Scoot McNairy says, fuck you. I don't know if he's been nominated, but he probably has. Or maybe they accidentally nominated someone else. Like, oh shit, was that Scoot McNairy?
He was actually playing Meryl Streep in one of those movies where she was nominated.
That makes sense.
Deep cover.
The Iron Lady, yeah.
Tessa?
I really just love the irony of a deaf girl bringing down a creature that is killing them all by using its sense of hearing. Really fun subversions of expectations and just being like, her getting the upper hand because she's that smart. She puts stuff together. She figures it out. Doesn't matter what kind of like quote unquote handicap she may have. She still is figuring this shit out. I feel like the way that this forks the storyline is pretty strong. Like I said, it had really good segues or cuts back and forth from the different storylines, which in some of them in and of themselves were jump scares. I was like, God damn it, movie. It's like, you got me, you got me. And it also did get me, like Frank said, with the emotional aspects. I'm a sucker for any sort of like father-daughter relationship movies. Those always get me. Maggie got me as
What's
well.
Weird is that this is a father-daughter relationship movie where the father is long since dead.
Yep.
But it's really, it's he's the ghost in the film, mm-hmm. you know?
For sure.
Yeah, it still gets me every time. I love horror, I love sci-fi, and I love Cillian Murphy. I was very, I was very stoked he was in this. I mean, he's been great since, you know, 28 Days Later and Sunshine and, you know, just anything he's in. It's
no one's ever mad to see him pop up in a movie.
Never. No one's like, oh, he's, Cillian
or
Murphy.
His gorgeous, or his gorgeous eyes.
So bad. Know, right? And then he shows up and it's like, at least he's in it. Like, he's always a
young Alec Baldwin. I would have to say I would give this a 9 out of 10 grocery bags that are rustling unsettlingly as John Krasinski goes shopping for his family before a baseball game.
I think we're largely on the same page. I think this is not quite as good a movie as the first one is, but I think it's a more fun movie in a lot of ways. It's definitely, like, if you're looking for something that's a lot more nonstop thrill ride, this is more your movie. I love that this little girl is basically become the action hero of this film, and they sell it. It's not unrealistic. She's cool, man. I want to see her come back. There apparently is a spinoff of this in development, but no details I've seen. I don't know what that means.
I would bet so much money that it's going to be a series streaming.
I don't know, but I will say that, like, there are other characters that appear in this film very briefly, and I'm going to give my rating based on that and give this 8.5 out of 10 Digimon Hansu almost cameo appearances.
Yeah, very brief.
But I liked him. He was like, he sprung into action, man. Like, he was, like, he knew that day was going
to
come.
He's a similar to Killian phenomenon. Like, when he shows up, he's just like, cool.
Yeah, it was originally going to be Brian Tyree Henry, but he had to bow out because of various other, you know, with scheduling differences.
Which actor?
Brian Tyree Henry from the show Atlanta.
Yeah, he's so good.
Yeah, he's great. Mm-hmm. I would have watched it with him too. But, you know, I mean, come on.
Another one of those Jamon guys.
Hansu. Yeah. He's awesome too. Neither one of them would have gotten to do very much. I mean, he didn't hear. He's like, hey, I'm in this movie.
I mean, that's a bit.
He did more than he did in Shazam. And I liked him in Shazam.
That's fair.